Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahulastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, welcome to Rich Chaney's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. This week's guest is Louisa Omerlan. You must stick around and see it. Don't just watch this bit. I know a lot of you just like the bit before the podcast, but stay this week because it's a really good one. If you enjoy these, why not come and see me on tour? My show is called Happy Now. I'll be touring the UK through February through to June 2016. Go to richchaney.com/happy_now/tour and you can find out if and when I'm coming near to you. It's been selling quite well, so maybe book ahead. Go figure. It confuses me, but maybe it won't sell well in 2016, so book some tickets anyway. Anyway, now it's time for the podcast. Go and have a look at it with your eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, I still haven't thought of it. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's worried that he has eaten a lot of weevils by mistake. It's Richard Herring! Crime does not pay. That is the answer to that. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. That's what it's called. That's its official name. Or as some of the younger kids are calling it now, Rahulastapas. Wow, you're much better than last week's audience. They hardly joined in with that at all. And so let's meet some of the crew. There's a guy here. He might be from the police because he's got police written on his T-shirt. So I think are you a policeman? You're an undercover policeman. You're doing well, and you're drinking beer through a straw. Why are you drinking beer with a straw? Does that make you more drunk? Is that the idea? Why have you got a straw? What's wrong with you? You got him a straw. Were you having trouble? Have you got like some kind of problem with your mouth that you can't drink properly? And then I've brought that up. You like to mother him. What's your relationship? Are you his mother? It's weird how it's like Benjamin Mutton thing going on, clearly, because she's a lot younger than you. What's your name?
Jennifer.
Jennifer, that's a lovely name. What do you do, Jennifer?
I work in communications.
You're good at it as well. She works in communications. She told me that, and I understood. That's good. What do you really do? So what's your name?
I'm Paul.
You're Paul, and you're in IT. That's fine.
He's in. That's good to know. Anyone? Hands up if you're in IT. Look at that. It's every hand in there. Everyone at the back as well. You can't see. Can't see him on this because that's. No, they're just like a sea of red. They're all wearing red T-shirts. What is the best thing about working in IT? What's the most interesting and best thing? No one understands it, but you do because you can communicate. Can you? If people come up to and say something to him, and then you can tell them what he thinks. Yeah. What's the best thing about working in IT?
Working with me.
Working with us. Oh, that's good. Do you work in the same place? Yeah. What does the business do? Housing, making it, destroying it, giving it to rich people and not allowing poor people to sleep in it. The opposite, helping poor people get houses. Good luck with that. Good. Well, that's very nice. Love to meet you. We're going to crack straight on with the... It's lovely to meet the audience. And you, have you been before to see Rahel Estepa?
Yeah.
Yeah, I recognise you, but I don't recognise... She's a woman without a beard. It's very confusing. So my guest this week is probably best known as Samira from Krakenori. That's why we're all here. Will you please welcome? I pronounced her name wrong backstage. She told me how to pronounce it, and now I've just got 1,000 names, got 1,000 different pronunciations flying around in my head. It's Louisa Amelan. She's definitely wrong. Here she is. Come in, sit down. Pull up a microphone. How are you
doing? Thank you, very well. Excited to be here. Hi, everyone.
It's lovely to have you.
Thank you.
You're very excited.
Was that my name in Krakenori? I didn't even remember
Samira.
What my character was called, was it?
What happened in that episode of Krakenori?
I can't remember. I was hungover for most of the recording, so I can't remember. It was good. I think we had to eat a dead person, something like that. The usual acting.
What was Krakenori? It was like a rude version. It was a Jackenori for adults. Was that the idea?
I think so, yeah. I didn't read the brief. I just... yeah, I think so.
It's good to know. You also played a woman with big hooped earrings in Miranda Hart's show.
I think you'll find that's not a character. That's very much part of my thing. Yeah, I like big hooped earrings. Yes,
Miranda
got attached to me. Yeah, in a Christmas special episode.
Right.
Yeah, I was girl with big hoop earrings.
Yeah. She didn't have a name.
No.
Not like Samira. You can't even remember her. Let's call her something. So you've sort of sprung out. It's sprung out from the public's mind, maybe from sort of nowhere, I guess, because you did.
I guess so.
Your first show, What Would Beyonce Do?
Yes.
Is a very rare thing. I shouldn't really have you on the show because it'll give young comedians the false idea that you can go to Edinburgh with no one knowing who you are and come out of Edinburgh
and
as a sort of.
Your dreams can come true.
As a star. Because it was one of those shows. It was a show that kind of didn't get any pre-publicity, as a lot of things do now. And then over the course of the 3 weeks. Became the kind of big hit of Edinburgh two or three years ago, I guess.
Yeah, it was. So I started it on the free fringe. So I found it really difficult to get an agent or a PR or a person. But I've been working in comedy for a while, but I'd done like sketch and sitcom stuff and improvisation and stuff. And I'd gone up to Edinburgh every year of the last 5 or 6 years. But I'd done improvisation shows, children shows, different types of shows. But it was my first solo show. And I get bored watching straight stand-up. I find it so boring. And so I thought, I like Beyonce. People like Beyonce. I've got an idea. Why don't every time I get bored, play a Beyonce song? This is like genius. And so I started doing that. And then people were like, oh, why don't you make the Beyonce song relevant to your material? And I was like, hello, there's an idea. And so I took it up to Edinburgh, but I couldn't get an agent or promoter or anybody to back it.
Yeah.
They weren't interested in it. And luckily for me, audiences loved it, and it was them that built it. And I actually played here last year, so it came to the West End. I had a West End run, here. So, it's nice to be back.
And
here.
You did. When I saw your second show, I didn't see What Would Beyonce Do, but I saw your second show. Am I Right, Ladies?
Am I Right, Ladies?
Where I was a rare man in the audience, but I was a man in the audience. I very much enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Do you find that men aren't going to your shows as much? Is that true?
I think more men are coming to Am I Right, Ladies than they are to What Beyonce Do. What Beyonce Do, it was men that had their girlfriends had dragged them along.
Yeah.
But they'd come out and they were like, oh, actually, I really enjoyed that. Thanks. you're welcome. But with Am I Right, Ladies, there's lots of men come. I had stag dudes come to Am I Right, Ladies.
Yeah.
And they enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know. If initially the joke was on them, but it turned around quite nicely.
But I mean, it's a very positive. Both shows, I think, very positive. You know, female shows.
Yes.
Image and about. You don't describe yourself as a feminist, though. You don't like being described as a feminist. Is that true?
I mean, I am a feminist, I guess, but I'm a woman. I'm a woman. I am what I am. I like being funny, and I'm bored of nonsense. And so I like doing comedy that, you know, engages and expresses those two traits.
Yeah.
So it's important to call myself a feminist because it's part of a movement that, you know, whatever. but that's how politically aware I am. It's part of a movement that whatever. So.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think you don't need to necessarily put labels in what you're doing is being, you know, it is a very positive show, and I guess, I mean, I read this stuff where you go, men don't like strong women and men don't like funny women, I can't really identify with because I really love those things.
That's
what I love about women. So it seems weird to me if that was genuinely the truth, that you would be off. I mean, my audience are mainly men and they're all terrified of you, but that's just because you are a woman. It's nothing to do with you. Most of them have never. That one's managed to get a girlfriend, which is unbelievable.
Well done.
Yeah. And good, he works in IT and he's pretending to be in the police.
Everything against you, you still pull that out. Yeah, I like it.
So you had a big hit with our internet viral hit with the bit from Am I Right
Ladies? Yeah, so I did the thigh gap. So I did the gala in Australia. So I did what Beyonce did in Australia earlier this year, and you had to do like a 3.5 minute set for a televised gala. And on the night, you're playing to like 2,500 people. Like, no one laughed. It was really bad. Like, I came out and I was like, I did it, and I performed it like I was nailing it. So before I went out, somebody was like, just perform it like you're nailing it. So I performed. I really delivered it. Like, yeah, I'm killing this. And no one laughed. People are going to the toilet. They're going to the bar. And I was like, this is so humiliating. But just pretend you're nailing it. And I came off and I was like, oh, that was a waste of time. And then I came home, went out on TV, no response, nothing, like one tweet being like, oh, who's that girl with the weird trousers? That was it. And then I posted it on Facebook, mainly for my mum to see and my friends to see. And the next thing I know, it started getting hits and hits and shares, and now it's on 29 million views. So yeah. So thank you three people, thank you.
But it's about, I mean, I think because when it's so weird, and I, as being an older person, I remember when on TV and everyone was allowed to be on TV, whatever you look like. And if you look back at, especially like at academic shows in the past, if you ever catch like an old episode of whatever, late review kind of stuff, the people on it are normal people, and to the extent they look ridiculous to the modern eye, because on TV now you all have to look in exact
a certain way.
In exact certain, and you're a very attractive woman, and yet you're still having trouble with going to LA and people telling you you're not
I find
got
it
the
difficult.
Right body shape or whatever.
So I went to LA and I hired a little theatre, 60-seater theatre outside there, and tried to put on what Beyonce doing to invite different agents and things. And my agent Debbie Allen came out with me, right, and it was like the fourth night, and I've been dying every night because they don't laugh, they just judge you, they don't like you, they just judge you. And afterwards they go, oh my god, you're amazing, and you're like, really? Just tell your freaking face next time. Like, they do not show any love. And I was crying before I went on. I was like, Debbie, I can't do it. I can't do another fourth night. This is so humiliating. She was like, look, Louisa, Sarah Silverman's manager came in yesterday. She said, you're too fat and you haven't got enough jokes, but I've got somebody else in there tonight, so why don't you go have another go? And I was like, thanks for the pep talk, Debbie. Wiping my tears. And then I went on stage, and then halfway through, I was like, do you know what? Apparently I'm too fat for you lot. So I pulled my trousers down and was like, bite me. And like, as soon as I did that, they were like, oh my God, she's amazing. And then I was like, oh, that's quite funny that showing that makes people laugh. Like, it's literally basic humour. Like, it's.
But it's also, I think, because most people, most of us don't have perfect bodies. And so most people watching the internet don't look like the perfect ideal of male or female.
Yeah.
And so to see someone actually saying it and showing and then going, look, here you go.
Yeah.
And here's my tummy. There's my tummy.
There's your tummy.
It's, you know, I think especially with for a woman.
It's amazing how it's resonated with people. And like, I think what I like, I think the other thing with the feminist thing, either here or there, I think lots of people like my shows, whether you're a man or a woman, and I do stuff that I find funny. Like you were talking, like I've heard you talk about before, like you do stuff for you that you find funny. And for me, that stuff is funny. And what I find ridiculous is I'm going out for dinner with friends and they're ordering salads when we're in a freaking steak restaurant. Like, mate, what are you doing ordering a salad? Like, come on now. Like, enjoy your food. It's not going to make a blind bit of difference. Like, just stop it and enjoy yourself. And I find that just nonsense. I'm bored of it. I'm so bored of it.
Yeah. Well, there's a very positive message, but you're all very honest, I think, also about the things, you know, about your depression and about not having a boyfriend. I don't know if that's still the case, but
it's the story of my life. not having a boyfriend. Yeah.
But you know, you're honest about it, and but it's still a very upbeat.
Yeah, show. But that's what people responded to in Beyonce. With Beyonce, I wrote a very, very honest show and was very honest and very flaws and all, everything. Like, I broke down and cried on stage and bared everything for the audience. And they really identified with it. And I felt so comforted by that. And I didn't care that I wasn't doing well with the industry or that I wasn't doing well in comedy circles, because I love making a connection with human beings and feeling like part of something. And so when it came to the second show, it was tapping into that same essence. Of what would Beyonce do, which is making a connection with people and being honest about stuff that we really should have more of a conversation about.
Well, again, I think that's because, again, a lot of people... I think comedy that's honest is, not exclusively, but is really interesting to people.
Yeah.
And it does make that connection if you show your vulnerability.
Yeah.
But I think you're so confident as well, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, it's high status, but it's being insecure, but high status is all it is. It's just putting on its head, because normally if you're high status, you're like, I'm amazing. Just look at my dick. I don't know if I can say dick, sorry.
You can say anything you
can
want.
Can I? Oh, can
you
I?
Can say
fine.
Motherfucker.
Oh, motherfucker. Right. It's high status, whereas with my show, I'm like, I've got cellulite to the back of my knees, and sometimes I hate myself so much I want to cut my own arms. Am I right? Bad bitches, yeah, and everyone's like, "Wow!"
But I think, you know, it is tapping into something that is part of the modern world. In that, I think it's so crazy. I mean, it's a lot of people have talked about that kind of, you know, the magazine things aren't realistic about body image and teeth. But it's got so crazy that
it's ridiculous. I'm getting messages from girls that are going, "Before I watched your video, I was really worried about my not having a thigh gap, and now I watch your video and I feel better about myself." And I'm like, "Jesus, babe, you've got bigger problems." If watching my videos made you feel better about yourself, like, that's quite alarming, I think. We have got problems.
But you're getting an audience that you say isn't a typical stand-up audience.
I don't think they're typical stand-up. No. Like, so when I was in Soho Theatre, I had a few runs at Soho Theatre, and Steve Locke, the guy there, he was like, it's amazing the audiences you're bringing into Soho, because I was getting girls from all different backgrounds, black girls, Asian girls, girls wearing like scarves and stuff around their head. Again, politics and thing ain't my strong point, but people from all different backgrounds that were coming in and really enjoying it and losing their shit over it. They were loving it, and they were people that wouldn't regularly go to a stand-up night, but I wouldn't regularly go to a stand-up night.
No.
So it's quite for me, I'm quite happy that they've found me and I found them.
Yeah. So let's try. What did you do before? I've seen you went to work. You went on to do some stuff at Second City.
Yeah, so I went to Chicago for a bit and did Second City and IOWN's Comedy Sports Theatre and just did classes in improvisation and clowning and sketch writing, topical joke writing.
So was that before? Or was that during?
That was before Beyonce. So I wanted to be a comedian since I was really young. I've always wanted to do comedy, but my mum wanted me to go to university with the hope of getting a proper job. So I did performing arts at university, which she was really pleased about. And I did stand-up comedy at uni.
Yeah.
And then I did a few of the, like I did the Frog and Bucket in Manchester, and I got reviewed being like, "Oh, smutty set." Oh, by awful Louise O'Milan. And I was like, oh, I can never do comedy again. No, I can't. I'll quit my lifelong dream because of that one man's opinion. I think that's a really sensible idea. So then I was like, oh, I'll do improv. That'll be better. Yes, improvisation. And then I was dating a guy who I was crazy in love with, and he dumped me. And I'd be walking around London and be like, everything reminds me of him. I know what I'll do. I'll move to Chicago. Great plan. So I moved to Chicago, but my visa only allowed me to stay there for 3 months, so I had to come back. But while I was out there, everybody was like, wow, you're so brave doing comedy and clowning in Chicago. And I was like, yeah, I'm so brave. Really, I was just avoiding my ex-boyfriend and crying on the tube. That's the only reason that I left.
But Second City is where a lot of the American people and a lot of the American stars have emerged.
Yeah, they're the people that I like. It's all like John Candy and Mike Myers and people like that all went there. Yeah, like Tina Fey and all of those guys have been there.
Amy Poehler.
All of them have been there, and their training is amazing. And also here, I think in England, if you say, oh, I want to be a comedian, I want to be in entertainment, I want to be in comedy, I want to be rich and famous, I want to be an actress, I want to be a performer, here they're like, you're a dickhead, like, it's not going to happen. Who do you think you are? And I also found when I was younger, it was very much for people with money, that career. It was, you had to go to drama school, and you had to go to a very established drama school, some little weird kid with Polish parents spoke Polish first language, like wouldn't get far in that career. Whereas in America, they're like, good for you, get your dreams. Yeah, you can do it. And you're like, yeah, maybe I can.
I think that's got more the case, certainly with acting. That because it's when I came to London in 1989 and didn't have anything, and you were able to rent a room in a house for £60 a week, and you know, and be able to eat baked potatoes and get by on, and you know, I had things like the enterprise allowance I did, where you got actually had your rent paid and you got 40 quid a week, and that was
amazing.
Enough to get by on in London in 1989. So it meant you could be. I mean, I was a middle class lad, but I didn't, you know, we didn't come with anything, and you had some time to launch yourself, whereas now the idea, you know, you sort of have to come to London, and if you do, then where the hell are you going to live?
Yeah, it's difficult. I really respect comedians, especially coming through now. Like, it's such a sacrifice, I think, for your quality of life. Like I had to move back home to my mum's house. I was living at my mum's house at the age of 29. Like, I'd be walking around my town centre where I'm seeing all my friends with on their third baby, buying their second house, being like, when are you going to give it up, Louisa? And, like, I'd be like, never, I'm sure one day. And, like, it's hard to do comedy. It's quite a sacrifice, I think. But it's, it's...
But I think it's just got hard. I think that's the reason...
Yeah.
You know, there's some of the acting, which is, again, I think so... There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of great actors, but there's so much demand that if you... And so, you know, there's so few parts and so many actors that if you were able to sit back and not have to worry about earning a living, you've got a better chance. Though on the other hand, I also do think that if you've got everything given to you in your life, you're not going to work hard. You know,
absolutely.
If you actually have to really work for something, you really want to do it. And I think the most successful comedians, especially, but also actors, really have had to work. You have to push. And if you're not, if you don't have to do that, if you are starving,
you have to do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Find out you want to do it.
Totally. I completely agree with that. And when I was younger, I genuinely thought if I graduated, I'd get an agent and that'd be it. Like, I'd made it. Yeah. I really thought that was the answer. And I graduated with the first. I got picked for the showcase. I did really, really well at university, and I couldn't get an agent for love. No money. And then, like, only now, 10 years later, have I got an agent and a team. And you go, shit, it's still not up to an agent, it's still up to me. Like, you have to put the work in. And you have to hustle, and hopefully use your team around you to facilitate that. But you're the one that has to do all the work.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also interesting that it's still, I think people, if they've seen you from outside, would go, oh, that, you know, that girl just appeared out of nowhere. It's an overnight success.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of that 10 years of...
Yeah. And you go, well, let them think it's an overnight success. All right, mate, you try and have the same success. Yeah, babe, you try and have the same success. Good luck with that.
But it's got so competitive. That's the thing, you know. Like, again, when I went to Edinburgh Festival, there might be 30 shows, and now there's 800 shows or whatever there is. So
I think you have to think of stand-up almost as a business, especially when it comes to Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of I did. So in terms of, you don't just need a good show. You have to know how to market your show. You have to make sure your posters are right, make sure the time is right, in the right venue. And a lot of comedians, bless them, they're quite autistic. Like, they don't really get... those aspects. So they'll go up with a show and be like, oh, I'm at 3 o'clock, you know, in Glasgow. And you're like, well, mate, that's not going to get you very far, is it? So I think you have to think, there's more things to think about as well as being funny. But then at the same time, I also hugely agree with, if you have an excellent show, people will find you.
Yeah. I think to an extent, but there must be. I mean, there's lots of excellent comedians who never get discovered beyond, you know, the famous. You know, someone like Simon Munnery, within comedy circles, everyone knows him and thinks he's amazing. But the general public will probably never encounter him, I think. And that makes you go, oh, this is terrible, because Simon's one of the biggest geniuses of his generation.
Course.
So, you know, I think it's there's ups and downs with it. But I think.
But does
I think,
he want that, do you think? Does
I
he want
know, I don't know
isn't
if he does.
He quite happy with.
I think he probably is, but, you know, it still seems a shame that
of course.
Kind of talent doesn't get discovered necessarily in the way. But, yeah, of course, he's a... I think I heard Adam Buxton's podcast, which is very good. Should you all listen to it anyway? I hate to say it, because he's sort of doing the same thing as me, just better. But you know, he was talking about him and John Ronson meeting an award ceremony. They both lost that, and you know, you look at Adam Buxton and John Ronson, you think those are two very successful men.
Yeah.
But they were saying how they both lost and how they were marginal figures, and Adam had said, "We're marginal." And that's why we're never going to win those big things. And actually, that's a positive thing, you know, that you're doing your own thing on the margins.
Yeah, it's
so it depends
what
you want. It depends if you want to be a big superstar or if you just want to do the work.
I want to be a big superstar. Yeah.
So when you went to America, did anything come out? Did anything come out of your American jaunt?
Well, putting my trousers down came out of it, and that got me the 29 million. So that kind of worked in hindsight. And I think it sounds really cheesy, but I think in terms of challenging yourself and making yourself really uncomfortable makes you slightly stronger when you come back to when you come back home.
Yeah.
Like, so that was good in terms of you go, oh, do you know what? If I've done that out there. I can, if I pull my trousers down to strangers, to Americans that hate me, I can try and write a joke for the UK. I can try and write a joke for the UK. And also just the confidence, I think the confidence from the schools and being surrounded by people and doing comedy every day. I mean, I paid for the courses, but being around, you know, comedy thinkers every day was just very, very inspiring. And it just makes you go, this is what I want to do with my life. So,
I can see you in like being an American movies and stuff though.
I'd love to do that. So next year I'd like to my thigh gap video, most of the views are actually American.
Okay.
And so I want to try and organise a little tour next year in the States. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but if I could play like little 60-seater theatres around the States and travel for like 6 months that would be a dream. That'd be amazing. I'd love it.
Well, see, that's if you are single and have nothing holding you down. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's either that or I'll get pregnant in it. So,
but you must, you know. I can't. You say again. I see you saying that lots of women hit on you after shows, but men don't hit on you after shows.
Women hit on me all the time. Women come up to me and they go, "Here's my boyfriend. You can have sex with him." Like that's how much women like me. Okay, women love me. Thank you. Yes, women love me. Men are like. They're big earrings. Thank you. Thank you so much. Please whip your willy out. Thank you.
I don't believe you.
It's true. It's really true. You say that. I've had to learn. I'm trying to learn to be with guys and when they say something, like even if I don't find it funny, just pretend to laugh. Just pretend to laugh. Pretend to laugh. I'm trying it.
Yeah.
It's hard. I know.
Don't do it.
I know, but it's so hard, babe. Like, there's only, like, come on, TikTok. Like, there's only, try it. I won't. Don't worry, I won't. I won't give in.
And are you writing an autobiography? Is that happening?
I mean, you say writing. Yeah. My room is very tidy at the moment. And I have washed all my makeup brushes. And I have rearranged all the files on my laptop into little folders.
Yeah.
So, yes, I am writing.
It's a very important part of it all.
Oh, mate,
that's
I don't want to do it.
As far as I get these days as well. That's all I'm doing all the time.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm terrible. I can't remember if it's procrastinator or prevaricator. Everyone picks me up when I get it wrong. Both, probably.
Yeah,
I'm one of the two.
Procrastination.
I can't even bother to look that up and find out which one I am.
But you know, it's got so bad. I downloaded and I paid £189 for an app where you talk into the computer and it types it for you. Like, it gets used to your own voice. Like, it was 108. It wasn't cheap. It wasn't like the Apple Mac regular one. It was like a specialised like IT guy. You should know. Like, it's like a proper thing, right? £189. And I still avoid it. Like, I just don't do it. I just don't want to write the book. I've told them, though, I don't want to write it. I've said have the money back, but they're like, no.
It's really, but I think writing a book is the hardest thing out of all the things you can write.
It's so boring.
It is boring. It's really difficult to concentrate, and it's very difficult to, you know, it's a very hard, especially if I think you're used to doing something like stand-up, which is a lot more improvisational and a bit more, you know, I write a stand-up show by standing on stage and talking about the ideas until it comes
out,
right?
Exactly.
And so the more you do that, the harder it gets to sort of sit down and think. But then again, it's just, I think if you can just say, I'm going to sit down and just write. Well, the thing I do, I write my blog every day, and you just write.
See, that's very disciplined to
do
that.
But, you know, I've got that kind of anal brain that means once I've started, I have to carry on doing it. But it's a great way of learning how to write. And also, you get 1,000 words down, and that's actually all that writing a book is. You just have to write 1,000 words.
For 80
days.
Stick
it in 1,000 words, and then you go back and look at it and go...
Yeah.
Unless you're Ben Elton, you go back and look at it and rewrite it. You're Ben Elton, just go, that'll do. Doesn't make any sense compared to what just... No, it's good. It's good. I'm Ben Elton. I wrote The Young Ones. I am good. I'll ask you some emergency questions. I've got some newer emergency questions I'm very excited about.
Oh, exciting.
It is very exciting. I've tried them once. They didn't work. I'm trying to avoid doing that. Oh, you know, people go there, I don't like the emergency questions. Only a few people, and then you change what you're doing. And
it
ruins the show. No, I'll do lots of them. Well, I'll ask you this. If you were Prime Minister and you had to use nuclear weapons, would you use nuclear weapons if you were the Prime Minister? Because Jeremy Corbyn wouldn't, but David Cameron would. What would you do?
I wouldn't. No. I wouldn't use them, I don't think. Well, yeah, just a waste of money. It just seems
ridiculous.
Well,
it's a waste to have them and not use them. My problem with Jeremy Corbyn is if he said that, he might as well just say, let's not have nuclear weapons, which he sort of is saying as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm qualified to answer that question, but I think I'd probably just not use them.
Okay.
Not use them, yeah.
I would definitely use them in some way.
Would you?
Yeah.
Maybe to give like the world a nice fireworks display, I'd like put them out into space and be like, hey, everybody have a day off. Look, woo.
And then they'd find out that you destroyed the ozone layer. And they go, it was worth it.
Just speeding up with the inevitable.
They'll go off. Someone will go off in our lifetime.
Oh, don't say that. Touch wood.
At least one.
Well, just make sure it's far away.
In your lifetime, maybe. Not. I don't know how long I'm going to live. What crimes have you got away with that you've perpetrated you've never admitted before?
You must have done some crimes. I do like stealing. When I was younger, I used to steal quite a lot. When I was younger, I used to steal mascara. Yeah. And then I got caught and I started crying and blamed it on the fact that my granny died 3 years ago. That was quite fun.
Started crying, the mascara started running, saying, see, look, it's not even any good. I'm not paying for this.
I mean, I didn't actually have any mascara on, which is why I was buying it. But yes, that would have happened. Yes.
I used to steal things that I didn't need mainly when I was in my early 20s. Now I steal things I do need, like pick and mix.
Yeah.
But then I'd often steal things I didn't really want.
Like what?
I can't remember. I occasionally sold... The printer cartridges are very expensive for my printer, and I did steal those, which was useful.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I'd steal things from... I stole a hairdryer from Boots.
I stole some...
I've still got it. I never use it.
I stole some photograph paper.
Yeah.
From PC World when I used to work and I used to be promotional work and be like, oh, check out this printer. And I stole some photograph paper.
Yeah.
And one time I was working in a bar in Zante and we used to give everybody free shots, like free shots. And I gave somebody a free shot and the guy gave me like £5 or whatever for the shot. And rather than being like, oh no, sir, it's free, you don't need to pay me for the shot, I put it in my pocket and I was like, £5, amazing. And then the manager saw me steal it, called me over and was like, what have you just done? I just saw you steal. You stole not only from the guy, you stole from me, you stole from the bar. You need to give the £5 back and you're fired. And I went to leave. And then as I was leaving, I just picked up some glasses and put them back. And then I just got the dishcloth and I just came back and wiped the tape. And then I just kept working. And then at the end of the day, he didn't pay me, but then he invited me back the next day.
Wow.
So I got fired and worked my way back into a job.
That's quite tight of him to fire you over that, though.
But it was stealing. He was like...
it's not.
Well, because he said...
Someone
he was
had given you £5, that's all right.
Well, I thought it was right, because I was like, it was like a tip that he didn't know he was giving me. but the manager didn't see it that way.
No.
Oh,
when you're young, it's fine when you're young. When you're 48 and you're stealing pick and mix, it's a bit tragic.
Yeah, but you can blame it on something else by then, can't you? Dementia.
Dementia.
Yeah.
And you know, and the fact that I've never been caught. I feel like a sort of pick and mix based Jack the Ripper. I mean, that's better than being Jack the Ripper, right? I mean, most people, if they go, well, who's worse, Richard Herring or Jack the Ripper? Most people say, I think Jack the Ripper was worse. And they go, which should we have a museum to one of them? Which one will it be? Oh, Jack the Ripper, that's weird. I would have had Richard Herring if there was going to be one between the two. So I'm better than Jack the Ripper, I think.
Yeah, but, marginally.
But the pick and mix industry doesn't see me in that way.
A pick and mix museum would be amazing.
It would.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
I could make a museum out of all the pick and mix I'd stolen. It would melt in the rain.
Yeah.
But it would be good while
it lasted. An hour. Yeah, I'd like that.
I could steal so much pick and mix that I open my own pick and mix shop and then make the money from that and then build a museum.
What's your favourite pick and mix?
I don't really like any of them. They're horrible. They're much too sugary and
disgusting.
So
it's just for the thrill.
And they make me feel, when I eat too many of them, I get a bit tingly and feel like, you know, I'm just on the edge of diabetes. When you're driving along, it's like everyone's going, watch out, Rich. That's it. Just the ends of your fingers start.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tingling. When you get older, this happens.
Okay.
I hope. It might just be that I'm going, don't eat any more sweets. No, I've got to eat. I like the my favourite one is the, it's like a cola bottle, but it tastes of bubble gum.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the blue and pink ones.
Yeah,
they're really nice.
Those ones I steal. If you, you know, if you're out there and you operate a pick and mix shop and you see me come in, that's what, that's, wait till I'm hovering over that. That's when I will steal them. And even though I like taunting the pick and mix salesmen and manufacturers, because they never catch me. I've said this before, but when I'm on a motorway, I tweet, I'm on the M4, I am going to strike again. And they still don't get me.
That's
someone
from
W.H. Smith's emailed me to say that they're on the lookout for me, but I don't know if that's just him.
That's hilarious.
What would they do? I mean, what would they do if they caught me? I mean, if they put all these things, times I've mentioned it together, they could get a good case.
Yeah.
But if it is literally me just taking one pick and mix, they're going to go...
Yeah, they're going to be like, mate, you can have it. It's only a penny.
Exactly. Well, it's not. That's the point. If it was a penny, I wouldn't steal them. That's the point I'm making.
Are you like Robin Hood?
I am. Well, I'm sort of like Robin Hood, trying to bring the prices of pick and mix down, but why what I'm doing actually increasing the price. I'm the main reason pick and mix is so expensive. It was. Do you think if you have sex with a robot that counts as cheating on your partner? Because it doesn't.
No.
No, good. It's a slightly weighted question there, the way I asked it then. Because if you disagree with me, you're an idiot. What do you think? It doesn't count. You should be able to have sex with a robot, right?
Yeah, it's no difference.
And that's fine,
to
even if you're in a relationship.
Yeah.
Could you talk to my wife about that?
Yeah, I'll
and
have a word.
And then invent a sex robot that I could have sex with.
I will lend her a sex machine.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't really want a sex machine. I want a robot. You know, I know there are apparently...
There's sex machines that are like robots.
You can plug a vagina thing into your car, cigarette lighter.
Oh, okay. No, they're gross. They're gross.
I understand.
They're gross. Do you know, I did a festival in Toronto and it was sponsored by the company that made them, and they gave all the comedians a free one apart from me. I was the only girl on the bill and they didn't give it. They were like, we didn't think you'd want it. Charming.
They were right though.
No, I would have liked, if you're going to give the boys one, give me one, like equality. Come on now.
Equality. I used to do, I can't remember the charity, but there's a charity that's about promoting sexual awareness and health for young people, and they always gave they would do a charity gig and you get a big bag of sex toys at the end.
Oh, amazing.
But I'm in tune, but I'm very self-conscious as a person, and especially so in, but I find the act of sex quite embarrassing.
Do
and
you?
Something that should just be, you know, carried out alone. And then still be shameful. And so I would feel too self-conscious to employ a lot of these things.
That's a shame that you're that insecure.
Well, I'm a very good lover, so it's all right. I don't need... Because I'm so insecure and self-conscious, it actually,
just,
you know, goes on for
light,
a long time.
Turn the light on.
Turn the light on?
Turn it on. Yeah.
But then having a little thing that goes... There's a little thing that's on a... It's like loads of tongues, but it's on a wheel. I mean, I just think it's sort of embarrassing. Like, I think with a vibrator, I once was with a woman who wanted me to use a vibrator with her, and you're kind of slightly insulted that I've got a real one of these. I don't need to.
It's not. If anything, it's a compliment.
It is.
It's a compliment because you go, oh, I like you that much. I'm going to introduce you to my best friend.
Yeah. It's not. It's I don't like you that much, and ideally I'd live in a world where it was just a penis.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to have you even moving it around. And it was rock solid.
I tell you what women find hotter if you're just not intimidated. If you get all intimidated and like, why do you need that? Like, it's what you're, I'm bored, we're done. Yeah. If you're like, yes, babe, then it's like, oh, hello.
Okay. I'll learn from that.
Well,
so I just go, I'm finding this embarrassing.
Yeah, then you've ruined everything.
And we haven't even brought sex toys into this yet.
Yeah.
Then that's a bad thing. Yeah, it's very self-conscious. So you've got to let go, right? I find that very difficult in everything. That's why I can't ever be happy, because I always think about all the bad things that could go wrong.
I do feel like that sometimes. Sometimes I like panic about things. Sometimes like a tube or a train will come past and I'm like, just jump in front of it. And then I don't.
Yeah. If you're going to kill yourself, don't do it that way, because it's just, it's an annoying way to kill yourself. That if you don't, don't kill yourself.
No, but it's not to kill yourself, but it's almost like the risk, it's the same. Like, I don't like going to the edge of a really high building just because I'll be like, all right then. Yeah, I fucking will. And I'll jump.
Yeah.
Not to kill myself.
You haven't done it so far, though, I'm guessing.
No, I know. Well, but I don't go to the edge. That's why.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like I was having this conversation the other day, and they said maybe it's a control thing. It's to gain control of the situation.
I think it is.
So you feel like, but obviously you're not in control because you're dead. Yeah. But for the moment that you're flying in the air.
I think thinking about it is a control thing. I think doing it is a stupid thing to do. Unless you don't want to be alive anymore.
No, but which don't. But call somebody. If you are having those thoughts and listening to this programme, please do speak to somebody because that's not the way to go.
Don't kill yourself, because you never know what's going to happen
next.
And
it can turn around in a moment.
It's interesting to find out what happens next, isn't it? It's like if you're... Yeah. If you were reading a book and we're halfway through the book, even if it's boring, it might get better.
No, some books are really shit. But it does turn around, and I do think that is an important thing to say. Like, I think having a shitty time is very human and very normal. And it's very, very... it should be encouraged. If you're having a shitty time, wallow in it. Enjoy it. Literally don't wash and eat pizza every day. Like, just wallow in the self-pity and self-loathing. It will go away eventually.
It will. And like, I was talking about happiness because I do this is my show, but when you're happy, if you're actually happy, you're at the kind of peak.
Yeah.
And the only way is down from
there. Yeah, of course.
Whereas if you're unhappy, at least you have the hope that
way is up.
Well, it's good. You can kind of think, I'm really at the bottom, but, there's somewhere to go from that. Think of those poor... pricks at the top who are happy.
Yeah.
It's only going to go wrong for them, and then they're going to come down to this.
Seesaw's
and they've
go
been
the
happy
way,
and they'll know how bad
it
is. Once you've been happy, being really unhappy is going to be the worst.
Yeah.
So, if you're unhappy and you've never been happy, fucking enjoy that.
Take some reverie in that. Yeah. Absolutely.
You're the best person
in the
world.
I agree with you.
I do get a lot of emails from people who are depressed, and so, and do say this show somehow helps them. I'm not sure how that works, but I'm very glad. It's one of the loveliest things that happens about this podcast.
Yeah, of course.
Is that largely people who've come through their depression email me. So if you are listening, it gets better, honestly, and be happy. Try and be happy. That's my advice.
Wow.
I'm very helpful.
Great.
Stop being so mentally ill.
Great. Stop being mental. Smile. Yeah.
Get out there.
Get over it. Jesus.
And just see where I just think, however, I mean, I've been through times when I was kind of really depressed lots of times, and it's horrible. But, I always think, I want to, I don't really want to die just because I don't want to. I want to see what happens next. That's all it is, really. It's a shame to miss out on the next awful atrocity that humanity commits. What will be the next thing we do? And then if you're dead, you miss out on that. So hang around to see what it is.
See what happens.
You might be involved in it.
Fingers crossed.
You can video it, and, with a bit of luck.
Yeah.
At least the video will survive.
Get it online.
It's a horrible world. I understand. So, as nice as they once were... Oh, hold on, I've come way half through a question. Kettle crisps are not as nice as they once were.
I agree.
Yeah. Have I changed or have they? Don't answer that. That's a rhetorical question.
But also, do you remember Brannigan's beer nuts with the skin on?
Yeah.
Oh, they used to be amazing. You can't get them anywhere now. No. Gutted. They
well, that
were
might
so
answer
good.
The question. If you could travel back in time to compare any food of today with an equivalent in the past, what time would you go to, firstly, and also what would the second is a two-part question. What food would it be that you tasted?
I would go back to 1994 to Farnborough Recreation Centre, swimming on a Sunday at 2 p.m. when I would go with my brothers and with my stepdad, and he would go to the bar in the Simple, and we'd get us all a pack of Brannigan's beer nuts. Right. And now, if you go here, it's like some shitty, ready, salted, fucking bullshit.
It's a lovely bar here at the Leicester Square.
Overpriced.
A fine selection of snacks. Overpriced.
Overpriced, small package, shitty, out of date fucking peanuts. Whereas in 1994, they'd give you a fucking bag that you could guzzle.
They weren't, I'd forgotten about them.
They were so good. And like
that's a real Peter Kay moment for me. That is a thing that I thought I'd forgotten about, but I hadn't forgotten about. And they were, and
they were so, and the
them.
Skin would come off. And the only place I found them was recently, as in an airport in Sydney. I found a bag, and I bought loads, but then I wasn't allowed them on the plane.
That's what I was going to say. You're not
good. I know, I had like a mouthful box. And then they were like, you have to get rid of them. And I was like, for fuck's sake.
You weren't allowed to even have the ones in your mouth.
No, I had I swallowed them and like savoured the moment. But I'll be back, Sydney. I'll come get you.
That's brilliant. That's a very good answer.
Well, thanks.
What is the worst emergency you've ever been involved in? That is an emergency question on two levels, ladies and gentlemen, that you should appreciate more. Most of you haven't heard
I don't think
before.
I've ever... I don't think I myself, touch wood, have ever been in an emergency. No. I did have... I was doing a gig once, right? And this guy was being a dick. I thought he was being a dick. So I kind of was a dick back to him. And then the audience started chanting, like, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. And I was like, charming. Like, what have I done wrong? And he was having a heart attack. And... what was happening is that he was like in the chair, but I couldn't because the light's so bright on stage. You see, so I don't know what was going on. I just thought he was being like fucking rude. So I was like, he's so fucking not used to having a woman on set. I was a proper dick. And next thing I know, these men in like yellow jacket, they were the ambulance. But I was like, why are they men in yellow jacket? What the fuck is going? What is wrong with you lot? And they were carrying him out, and he had a heart attack. So.
Did he survive?
I don't know, but I got paid. I got paid and left. Do you know what I mean? That's
Once had a guy collapse when I was talking cock. I'd talk about frenulum brevet, which is when the banjo string on the penis snaps.
Ouch!
Happens very often.
My imaginary penis just shriveled.
It's a quite nasty idea. And there's a lot of blood.
Is that like your Achilles heel?
Well, I suppose it is. It's probably the Achilles heel of the tiny man. It's a little reference there. He fainted. I saw him collapse. I thought he had died.
Yours snapped?
No, I was just talking about it.
I thought you said I was talking about the idea. Oh, not
of,
from experience.
Someone else's and blood coming out. And this guy, and he just fell, and he fell down the stairs. And he was all right, but he just fainted. He got taken out. I thought he'd died. So it was quite difficult to carry on, but I carried on. But then that guy, he sometimes comes to these gigs. He invited me to his wedding because...
did you help him then?
Well, not really, but because through that became an anecdote. And he emailed me, telling me he was all right, and his friends emailed me. And then I was going on holiday to Trinidad and Tobago on my own.
Good man.
And he said, I'm getting married in Tobago while you're in Trinidad and Tobago.
Come across.
So I went across and went to his wedding. And I just dressed in I didn't have any nice clothes with me. I was just dressed in shorts and stuff. And it was like a Hindu wedding and everyone else was dressed up really nicely.
Oh, I wouldn't want to touch his penis again after that. I'd be so like, oh, you poor penis.
Yeah. Well, after the wedding. Just getting married would be that bad. It heals, apparently.
Yeah, but how long does it... Does he have to exercise it? Like, does he have to, like, you
Well,
know...
I think that's the problem. I think the... that happens, yeah. Wow. Like that frisson of... The frisson of sometimes having sex where things aren't quite lubricated enough or just by having sex a lot of times can cause it. So don't have sex. That's what... Or when you're having sex, be aware that it could happen and then you'll be as self-conscious as I am about sex. But if you just think, oh, could the next thrust be the one? not sure I can ever enjoy sex again. But he'll make you a good lover because you'll go on for a long time, though with a slightly flaccid element to it.
Good to be careful.
I do know a lot about penises.
Yeah, do all your podcasts go like this?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, no, you're nothing special. Don't think this is... I'm not flirting with you with my damaged penis material. This happens to everyone. I've seen what my other new emergency questions are. I don't want to ask you that one. What about the sport is intrinsically stupid? Discuss.
I don't care.
Yeah. That's good.
I just don't care. I don't have the time. I just really don't care.
Okay.
Next.
Do you remember the TV show Spitting Image?
No.
Okay. The problem with that question is, you know, young people don't know what I'm talking about. They wouldn't be able to pick out the... I used to write. I've got two sketches on Spitting Image. I wrote Spitting Image.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So it's one of the first things. One of the first things I did. I wrote the one about Mr. Kipling's cakes. Remember that one?
Is that a famous sketch?
No, it isn't. And I wrote one about Arnold Schwarzenegger and Doc Cotton teaming up as an unlikely pairing of cops.
That sounds quite fun.
That sounds good, yeah.
I'll look it up on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
You should look it up. You should look it up. It was good. That one does not apply.
Why doesn't it apply?
Because it's you don't have children. And it's, have you ever left your children behind? So that's why it doesn't apply. So I wasn't going to ask it, but now I've created an awkward atmosphere. I asked you quite a lot of these backstage, so that's why I could keep on. If you had to get married to one of the Muppets, which of the Muppets would you get married to?
The big yellow bird one.
Oh, yeah, I don't like him.
Why?
I just think he's supercilious. I find him arrogant. It's because in Elmo's song, which I've realised I mentioned for the third time now, but this is my life now, is mainly listening to Elmo's song. He's very sarcastic to Elmo. Elmo makes up a very good song. Given it's made up, it's fucking catchy, right? He's just made it up. And then Big Bird goes, ooh, to think he made that up on his own. He's trying to be encouraging, but he's being sarcastic.
Aww.
And Elmo is much better than Big Bird, so Big Bird can fuck off. If you're going to marry... They're actually Sesame Street characters, not the Muppets, so the whole thing is a... thing has turned into a travesty.
Who's in the Muppets then?
The adult ones. They're all in it. Those ones are all in it.
Yeah, them too. I love two of them.
Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy, all sorts.
They're Sesame Street.
No, they're it's a very different program.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Yeah. It's mainly puppet based.
Muppets, puppets.
I'm kind of obsessed with puppets. I don't know if there's something happened to me in my past. I don't know. I don't like to bring it up, but it's made me like puppets a lot. So a lot of my questions are either penis or puppet based for some reason.
Puppet
very
penis.
Few of them about. And that, you know, if you had to have sex with one of the Muppets, which one would you have sex with?
Whichever one. I don't know. I don't know. Okay. The bird.
Big Bird. See a prick, you'd be going, oh, this is really good sex. Fuck off. Shut up, Big Bird.
We'd have really cute little yellow babies.
You would. Okay, so...
you run out of emergency questions,
haven't run out.
You?
I've got so many that it's...
Just aren't relevant
it's overwhelming.
To
I'm just trying to
childless
avoid...
Childless female.
I'm trying to avoid... Why can't everyone be babies? That's a question to you.
Why can't everyone be babies?
Yeah. Good, wouldn't it?
It would be lovely, actually, yeah.
So why can't that happen?
I don't know. It would be nice. It'd be nice if everybody listened to... They're more like their inner child, I think.
No, they People are actually like babies.
Actual babies. Yeah. I don't know.
Everyone became a baby. It just happened bang like that. There'd be a magic crystal. Everyone would be a baby. You'd be sitting there going...
Who would feed them?
No, they would die.
Still die
would
out.
Be good.
Wouldn't that be
but
a good...
But for like an hour or two...
That'd be a good way to die out, rather than that nuclear thing. Yeah. Like, if we just, like, somehow, over evolutionary time, we just stopped developing and just were born and died.
Yeah.
Be nice.
Not a
nice way to go.
We just went, we were babies, then just everything. No, I think in the baby wouldn't be aware of its own death. It wouldn't be...
You don't know that.
It'd be hungry and then covered in shit and then unhappy... Yeah,
no,
it'd
be happy. Happy baby.
I've just thought it through. It'd be terrible. It'd be a
happy,
terrible
happy
thing.
Happy, happy baby.
Terrible thing to happen. Oh, I'll tell you what, I should ask, if I can find them quickly, is I've got some emergency questions I'm meant to ask.
Oh.
That people have paid to ask. So I think I'll try one of those out on you. Just fill time for a sec.
Okay.
Talk about Beyonce or something for a bit. No, I'm straight in.
Oh.
But one of them is... Hugh O'Sullivan asked, what is the most criminal act you've committed as a child?
Thank you, Hugh. Great question.
But, I think I also came up with that question independently, so the joke's on Hugh. He's wasted his money. All right, I'll ask you Matthew Plumridge's Plumridge. Oh. That's quite a good Plumridge. Name for the old banjo string, isn't it? That's the Plumridge is that when it carries onto your testicles, that little where they fuse together. Matthew Plumridge.
I had no idea it was such a phallic-based podcast.
I'm sorry. I know.
No, I don't mind. It's okay, fine. Just lots of...
Well, this is rude. Would you prefer to shit yourself every time you saw someone eat a banana or orgasm/ejaculate every time you saw your mother-in-law, father-in-law? No, it doesn't, you know, we can make that
That is a great question.
I mean, it's all right for you at the moment because you don't have a mother-in-law or a father-in-law.
No, but if I had one, I hope I liked him. Yeah. And that would be very indicative of how strong our relationship is. So I think the latter. I think I'd rather ejaculate every time I saw my mother and father-in-law.
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
And also then, like, I don't know what the stereotype is, you know, like, parents or whatever-in-law, then they'd never come out for Christmas. I'd never have to see them, would they? Because, like, the husband, he'd feel all inferior. And like, oh, why do you always, like, why can you only come when my dad comes round? I'm like, it's not my fault, babe. It's your man Plumridge.
I mean...
He cast the spell.
I think it'd be kind of easy to avoid your mother-in-law and father-in-law, where it's harder to... It's harder to avoid seeing someone eating a banana.
And then you shit yourself. That'd be so humiliating.
I know, but that's a difficult thing to... That's what I mean. It'd be a difficult thing to avoid.
Yeah, it'd be horrible.
Because you can't... I mean, unless you went around with your eyes covered all the time and then just said, is anyone eating a banana in this room? You'd have to have a trusted friend who you knew wouldn't lie to.
But what if you got in someone's car and they had, like, a banana skin? Then do you, like, trump a lot? Like, how does it work?
Well, I don't think Matthew Plumridge...
Thought that through.
Plumridge...
Yeah, I wouldn't want to shit myself all the time. I hate shit. I shat myself on Valentine's Day 2 years ago, and it was so humiliating. I wouldn't want to do it again.
No.
I had a bum operation once.
Did you?
Oh, it was so humiliating. Yeah. I'm not into, like, bum jokes or anal or any of that. No, thank you.
Or bum operations.
Bum operations.
Is that because you've had a bum operation?
I had a bum operation. The bum is no I had, like, funny. Six men look at my butt crack.
Yeah.
Like, it was in an army doctor, so they were, like, on training. And so they were like, oh, this is our patient, Louisa. Spin around. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. I had to, like, roll over. And then, like, they opened the flap. And then they were like, oh, this is Louisa's bum. And I was like, this is so humiliating. And they all looked at my butt. And, yeah, I've got a scar in my bum.
Did they solve the problem, the bum problem?
Yeah, it fixed itself. But it just makes me depressed when I think about it. And so that's why I don't like putting a finger up men's bottoms or any attempt at anal.
Okay, well...
Leave my bum alone.
We'll bear that in mind.
Thank you. Yes.
It's good to advertise that in a podcast form because then people will know. You know, that's nice to know.
I just think...
More people should say that.
Yeah, like...
I once a woman tried to put a champagne bottle up my arse. I did not enjoy that.
Do you know once somebody poured... Me and my boyfriend at the time, we got a bit frisky with champagne. You know when you're, like, getting a bit frisky? You're like, oh, I'll pour champagne all over your body and lick it off. And he poured it down. Me. And I think I had, like, an allergic reaction. It started stinging. I had to run to the bath. It was so painful. So don't use champagne.
Don't do that. Champagne's not in sex toy. She said, I thought you might like it. And I said, no. I didn't.
No, it's never as sexy as it sounds. No. Like, it always is like, oh, champagne bottle up your ass. And then the reality is it's very... painful.
Yeah. Always just check before.
Just ask.
Would you like any...
This is a very strange podcast, isn't it? I mean, I didn't think it was going to go down
okay,
this
I'll
route.
Ask you another of the emergency... These are quite good emergency questions, which most times I get suggested emergency questions and they're not good.
Are they?
So I'm glad the ones that people paid for aren't terrible.
Okay.
Because I've...
Well, let's be the judge of that, shall we?
Tim Turner says, Richard Dawkins claims to have seen dogs doing a 69. What's the worst lie you have told to impress people?
I
It doesn't need the first bit, but that is a useful it's a useful indicator. It's a very good question.
That's what's the worst lie?
What's the worst lie you've ever told to impress people? If it was the one about people looking at your bum crack, that was that was that was a lie. That was it.
I
like people who lie. I mean, I'm very honest. I think you're very honest as well, because there's no need to lie.
No, I know.
But like in the news, I'm really trying to get Brian Blessed as a guest on this, which I haven't managed to do yet. But he said this week that he in the 1960s he'd been out jogging and a woman had started giving birth and he delivered the child, bit off the umbilical cord and then licked the baby's face before giving it back. That is definitely a
lie.
That's
a lie.
That definitely didn't happen.
That's a lie.
And I think, you know, Brian Blessed, when I met Brian Blessed, he told me I met him once at a party and I said, oh, how are you doing? What's going on? He said, oh, I'm just training to go. I'm going on a mission to Mars with NASA. And I'm changing. I'm training to go to Mars. Okay. Yeah. I think he was doing a TV show about that, but he made it sound as if he was going. They'd selected four human beings to go to Mars and one of them was Brian Blessed. Presumably they'd seen like Flash Gordon and thought it was real or something like that. So I think he's just a liar. It's like CJ from Eggheads is a liar. He's just a liar. I'd like to get him on. But now I've said this, CJ from Eggheads claims he pushed a man in a canal and may have killed him. It's just a lie. And that bloke said that David Cameron had sex with a pig's head. It's just a lie. I love people who lie. It's just a lie. I know you want it to be true. That's the way good lies work.
He said he made it up.
I think that's a made up story.
No, it's not.
You want it to be true.
No, it's not. It is true. It's totally true. You can tell by his face.
That's what.
You can tell it's true.
You want it to be
true. He would have easily given in to peer pressure. David Cameron does not look the kind of dude that would be like, no, I'm going to stand my ground. He would have fucking totally been sucked off by a pig. Like, that's totally what he would have done. Don't try. Why are you sticking up for David Cameron?
I'm not trying to stick up for him. I would love it to be true. I just don't think it's true.
Yeah, but why? Believe.
But then that's what we get into a world where whatever anyone says is true.
Yes, David Cameron fucked a pig.
That's a terrible world. It's not worth losing David Cameron for that awful world to enter. What's it like being part Polish? Is that working out all right for you?
I'm really hitting.
Are you completely Polish?
I'm British. I was born and raised in Britain. I'm British. I've got an English accent. I'm British. Okay. Right? Yay. Right? Thank you. Yeah. British till I die.
Your heritage, is it your parents Polish?
Fine, they're both Polish. But I'm
British.
Why
don't you piss off back to Poland where you came from?
Excuse me, I was fucking born here, right?
I'm trying to get the UKIP vote.
My mother can jog on, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. Yeah, it's not doing much. Like, I'm not hitting any, like, I thought I could use it for, like, this whole, you know, like, ethical quota boxes, but no one's into, like, Polish people. It's because I look too white.
And is it a Polish name, Armelan?
Not really, but Małgorzata is. And that's my middle one.
Okay.
So, but not many people know that.
Okay. Not a lot. So we found something out through my racism. My racism has proven worthwhile. I want everyone in the world to come. I think what the great thing about Britain is that everyone in the world lives here. They're all different nationalities here, and I want the people who don't like that to go and live somewhere else.
Yeah.
Why can't we just put them? I think the Isle of Man would work quite well because I think they're quite like that there anyway. Yeah. You don't want to judge. But there's enough room on the Isle of Man, I think, for all of the UKIP people to go and live together, and the rest of us can have the interesting cuisine.
I love being British. I think Britain gets a hard slog. Like, I think the majority of British people are very good, welcoming, nice, lovely people. And when I'm here, I'm always like, I'm British. But actually, I feel quite, you know, cosmopolitan. I've been so influenced by different cultures and different people. But when I go abroad, I'm always really proud to be British. Even though they try and be like, oh, especially if you go to like Spain or Greece, they're like, oh, British girls are slags. And you're like, yeah, and what?
That's why I'm proud to be British.
No, but like, no, like, I'm, Britain's a great country. I'm so grateful to my mum for coming over here. Could you imagine if I was born over in Poland, trying to do fucking stand-up in Polish? Jesus. I would have been married to my cousin and been on my sixth child by now. Like, it would have been devastating. So, thanks, mum.
Hooray for Great Britain. We are fantastic here. We're going to have to wrap it up. I'll just try and ask. I'm going to get one. Oh, yes. I have to ask you this. And I don't know which way it's going to go. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No. Sorry. No. But in a past life, I was a black African queen.
Okay. I knew we'd get there eventually. So, how do you know that?
Because when you know, you know.
That's the earrings of stayed. I was born with these earrings, so I know.
Yeah, when you know, you know. I once went to go see a therapist and a psychic in the same day. And my therapist said I've got issues because I was a middle child, so I always struggled to be heard and listened to. And my psychic said it's because in a past life I was a black African queen. And I was like, both of you are right. Yes.
It's true of every middle child, I believe, that they were once a black African queen.
No. Excuse me. There's only one black African queen around here. Thank you very much. Past life. Angola was there.
In Angola. I'm glad we've got more specific, because otherwise it would be just awfully racist.
How is it racist? It's not racist, is it?
Of them.
It's not...
Just to go, you're a black African queen. I'm glad they got more specific.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Have you looked up the ex-queens of Angola and worked out which one was you?
No, it's too painful. It's too painful to go back into the history at all. I'd rather just... I know it's in there.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Angola?
Obrigado. That's Angolan for... Go. No.
I think you'd be a good queen.
Right? I think I would be very regal.
Of Angola, you know, not
regal.
I think you should start in Angola and then work your way out.
I will be the Angolan queen of comedy, quite happily. That's my title. You can't steal it.
I won't. I'll make
it. Don't even try. I know what you're like.
I'm going to make it the title of this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a big round of applause to Louise Omerland.
Thank you
very much. Bye. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Louisa Omerland. I've done these credits every week and I always have a moment where I forget what comes next. The music is by Pess. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Stripe for all their hard work. That includes all the crew as well who are sitting around on their phones while I'm saying this. Thank you also to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. It includes all the people at the bars that are getting ready in the bars while I'm reading this out. We've done it beforehand. Thank you to my producer, Dave Cribb. This is a Go Faster Stripe, Fuzz and Sky Potato production. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. If you would like us to make more of these, go to gofasterstripe.com/badges. You can make a one-off donation, get a badge, make a one-off donation and not get a badge, or you can make a monthly donation and all that. The monthly donation money will go towards hopefully making some more as it occurs to me. In return for that, you get access to a secret channel, you get a badge, you get an email most months telling you of secret stuff coming up. You get an entry into a competition every month where you can win lots of crazy prizes. So think about doing that if you like, or just carry on enjoying this for nothing, and maybe tell your friends about it, because the more people who listen to it, then some of them might give us some money instead of you. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.